From Midtown Studios at Allied Headquarters, this is the Allied Angle, where we take an in-depth look at market trends with industry experts. I'm your host, Amber Guthrie with Allied Solutions. On this episode, we're reviewing and looking back at all that was 2023 and more. Next on the Allied Angle. Welcome to the second season of the Allied Angle, your auditory complement to Allied Solutions e-newsletter, Allied Insights. Today, we're kicking off 2024 with a bang, as I'm joined by a very special guest, Allied Solutions CEO, Pete Hilger. Pete, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very, very welcome.
As CEO, Pete leads all aspects of Allied Solutions, including strategic vision and development, acquisitions, key industry relationships, and the overall value proposition to clients and partners. He served as Allied's President and Chief Marketing Officer before being promoted to CEO in August of 2016. He has over 30 years of corporate management experience focused on strategic planning, product and service positioning, acquisitions, and partnership development. Pete began his financial services career in 1990 as Principal and Executive Vice President at the companies comprising the Eldridge Corporation. Prior to his career in the financial services sector, Pete served 4 years in the U.S. Air Force. However, he's not all work and no play. In his free-ish time, you can find Pete traveling, exercising, fishing, boating, and just plain being on the water. Pete, that sounds amazing.
The water is very relaxing. It definitely settles things down.
What's your favorite body of water to relax?
The Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, the blue water. Yeah. Very nice. Pete, first, I just want to say thank you for your service.
Well, thank you. It's truly an honor to serve.
But now, we must feed you to the wolves in what we call our accelerated Q&A, just so our listeners can get to know you a little bit better. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Number one, where did you grow up?
Minnesota.
Minnesota. What part of Minnesota?
St. Paul.
St. Paul. What was your dream job as a kid?
I think I probably wanted to be a football player. Now, that's kind of funny looking at my size, but that was probably my childhood dream and why, I have no idea.
Describe yourself in three words.
Intense, caring, and helpful.
What advice would you give to 18-year-old Pete?
Make sure you pay attention to your parents. And I'll tell you, the thing that helped me the best was join the military. So if you don't have a direction, serve your country. You'll learn a lot of discipline. Don't take life so seriously either.
Have a little bit of fun.
Yep.
What are the top three items on your bucket list?
Well, I've traveled a lot. I think I would probably like to go to Newfoundland, Sweden, those areas up there. Newfoundland, I've kind of been up there in Canada a little bit, but just enjoying that, getting out in the wilderness, that would be a bucket list. A weird one is spending time with my wife. I work all the time, so I always tell her when I retire, my bucket list is going to be spending more time with you. And then I'd like to go to Thailand. So they're all travel related, but Thailand's somewhere I'd like to go.
So speaking of travel, what is your favorite place to visit, or where is your favorite place to visit?
Italy.
Oh, what part?
A little town called Portofino. It's a romantic, by Cinque Terre, which is five fishing villages up in the northwestern part of Italy. So it's beautiful.
With amazing food, I'm sure.
Great food and great wine.
Oh, even better. What was your last impulse buy?
Oh, those happen frequently. They're usually clothes, though. I love clothes, so it's usually clothes. I'll just stick with clothes.
Clothes, that's safe. Yeah. That's a safe one. And last one, what makes you the happiest?
Making people successful.
Makes them happy. Makes you happy. Makes them happy. It's a win-win, right?
It sure is.
All right. Pete, let's kick off with the obvious. 2023 was not an amazing year for the financial industry or the economy. We're experiencing the highest interest rates in over 20 years. Inflation is on everyone's mind. Labor shortages are still very evident, and everyone is searching for liquidity. You engage with financial leaders across the country daily. What have you been hearing from them regarding this past year in the industry, and what is their outlook for the future?
Well, I do talk to a lot of different CEOs in many different industries. And, you know, the interesting thing is it's not just about what happened in 23, because you have that carryover of COVID. And you think of what we all went through between 20, 21, 22, and 23. Think about that, 3.5 years. Challenges we've never experienced before. Then you have the economy, like you brought into 2023. You have a strike with UAW that just continues to compound challenges. So I think it's today when I talk to CEOs, they need to get their people more focused. So that culture mm-hmm. is really missing in a lot of organizations. And then learning from interest rates, for example, when you think about the learning there, who thought within 15 months the interest rates would go up? So people really got caught with their kind of focus lacking. And you have liquidity issues that you mentioned. You have lending challenges. But the real big one that they're saying is this delinquency just jumped on top of them. And if you think why, well, we had all this free money coming into the system for a lot of years. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, I woke up one day, and now I have to be accountable as a consumer and as an institution. I need to learn to react again and put those disciplines in place that I had prior to this chaos happening in our lives.
So would you say they're overall, are they a little worried? Or, because I mean, that is a lot of layers upon layers upon layers.
I would say the ones that are worried won't be around. The ones that are challenged mm-hmm. and are up for the challenge will be successful. And so I see people really striving to get talent within their organizations. I also see a big mistake happening. I see CEOs that have stepped away for the last 2 or 3 years because let's face it, although there was a lot of crisis and change going on, life was a little bit easier when you're running a financial institution during that period of time. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, they have real challenges. They may have not have been as focused as they should be, and they acknowledge it. That's the first part of fixing something is acknowledging I have a challenge mm-hmm. out there. And so finding the talent and kind of re-engaging themselves and their staff and being successful and being able to deliver services to their members and customers.
So if you could summarize 2023 in 5-ish words, give or take, what would those words be?
Challenges solved by data and technology.
Technology, I think that was a big word on the bingo card this year.
It sure was. Expensive word.
Yeah. Some other market challenges we saw, especially in the credit union industry, include cybersecurity threats, increased competition from online lenders, succession planning, and aging membership. To touch on aging membership just for a moment, I personally find the data on Gen Z and millennial members to be fascinating with that 4% and 5%. Gen Z makes up, as I said, 4% of credit union members while millennials are coming in at 5%. While I'd like to get your thoughts on how to tackle some of the other challenges, if membership in those areas don't improve, those other challenges won't really matter. So where does the focus need to be to improve these numbers?
So it is interesting because you can't walk away from your core membership today. And those are the people that are the Gen Ys, the baby boomers, et cetera, out there, because they want to be serviced differently. Mm-hmm. But then you need to focus on all those people that are really going to be a part of your credit union long-term, specifically talking about the credit union market. They need to understand what they need. They don't necessarily need to come in. There was a thing, I don't remember, know if you remember this, but I know a lot of people mm-hmm. listening did, where there was a bank in Chicago. It was called Chicago First Bank, I think. And they were going to start charging for their elderly customers to walk in and do a transaction. And the reason they were is they found out that that dynamic of an individual wanted to talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. So the banking transaction was just one thing they were there for. It was the social aspect. It obviously backfired on them. And the reason I share that, that's not going to work with the younger generation.
Right.
You got to focus on self-service. You have to make the transaction an easy event for them, and you have to have value. And more than ever, I think when you look at what they're providing today, they have to find value that's meaningful to that age bracket of individual.
Because mm-hmm. this is a generation or generations that aren't afraid to change. So if they don't like the service they're getting, they're okay. They're not going to deal with it. They're okay
exactly.
with jumping ship. So we don't need to spend a whole lot of our time today talking about 2023, but as the saying goes, those who fail to learn from history are doomed to repeat it. With that, what did we learn from 2023? What are some of your top takeaways?
I think one big one, you don't have to hit a home run every time. I think that in 23, they started taking little bites of the apple to make progression, to make changes that are inevitable, going to make them stronger in the future. So that was a really big one. And I also think people realized how valuable people are. And what I mean by that, you can get all the AI you want, you can get all the technology you want, but if you don't have real good people that are delivering that message or providing ultimately that engagement, you're not going to be successful. And I think that's why we see a labor shortage going on right now.
You were a keynote speaker this past July at NAFCU's Engage Conference, where you challenged credit union leaders to embrace an innovative mindset. What exactly does that mean, and what does this type of mindset look like to you?
So when I think of innovative, the first thing I think of, it's okay to be uncomfortable. Go outside of the box, think outside, and quite frankly, you can't be selfish. So much of what we do every day indirectly relates to what you like or what you don't like, right? And so to be innovative, you need to think outside of the box. You need to partner, especially when you talk about the credit industry, too small to be able to succeed on your own. And so setting down your guard, maybe getting rid of a little bit of control and partnering with people to develop. The other thing is get the right technology. I think about what we're going through at Allied with One Allied right now and all the modernization. You have to get the right technology because that's what's ultimately going to create the efficiencies and the margins that you have. So innovative to me is ultimately getting out of your comfort zone, engaging, and really investing. Investing in partners and investing in data and technology.
So do you think having that innovative mindset and embracing technology will eventually weed out the ones that stay around and the ones that slowly fall by the wayside?
So how many gas stations do you go to today where they come out and put the gas in your car?
If there are any still out there, I do not pass them.
Okay. So that's what's going to, that answers your question, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, they will not survive in the marketplace today because you've got this aging set of membership from the credit union specifically, but even in the banking industry. If you can't figure out how to serve the newcomers, the younger people that are coming up, those are the ones that are going to have the money. They're the ones that are going to spend. They're going to need loans. You're going to have to figure it out. Otherwise, you'll be irrelevant.
So Pete, do you find that marketing towards a younger generation is more difficult now than it is with the previous generations? Because it seems that everybody was, it was kind of a smooth transition, and now all of a sudden it's like, woo, Gen Z, what do we do?
Yeah, and so when you're at a restaurant now, you see a two-year-old working a phone. You see them, I mean, I just had four grandkids, it was a disaster, by the way, four grandchildren at my house. And they knew how to work on the phone, and they were 15 months old. And so, yes, and I think the driver, though, isn't the character of the individual or that generation. It's the technology. Never in our history has technology been going so fast. Think about this with AI coming in now. I mean, there are so many different threats out there. Mm-hmm. There are so many different types of personalities you're dealing with because our world has become much more rounded, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're dealing with different types of emotions, different types of decisions, technology. And they know so much about you already. And so if you don't know as much about them, you're going to be up for a long run as far as being successful.
Sounds like a lot of open positions for Gen Z and millennials coming up to help market to their own demographics. You also talked about the importance of having strategic partnerships in order to grow. Can you elaborate on what types of partnerships FI should be seeking and what it takes to make those partnerships successful?
Most definitely. The big need is going to be membership growth. Mm-hmm. They'll figure out, credit unions have been very savvy in figuring out the different economic conditions and how they grow from a lending standpoint. They've not done a very good job in growing their membership. And when you grow membership, what happens? Your deposits grow, demands and needs grow, ultimately you're going to grow. Mm-hmm. And they have to partner with people. They can't afford, I think our company will spend $75 million in data and technology in 2024. That's just one company. You go to a big bank or a big marketing company out there, they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars. And so they have to find a good marketing partner. They have to find a good technology partner. They cannot do this on their own. And they have to find somebody that knows what to do with data. And the answer isn't just AI. You know, AI is very, very interesting, very powerful, very dangerous. Mm-hmm. But think about AI. It has to learn too. And so thinking I can just go and invest in AI and the problems are fixed isn't true. We sell a lot of AI. We use a lot of AI. It's a learning process. It gets smarter and smarter and smarter. And the good thing about it is it doesn't make errors once it learns. Mm-hmm. And that's the benefit of AI. But people have to be patient with that as well.
The collapse of several banks last spring made more than a few headlines. And now the CFPB and attorneys general seem to be putting some overtime in as they are paying closer attention to exposing potential borrower sensitivity concerns, which I'm sure has FIs on edge as they try to keep up with the continuous regulation changes and potential fines/potential heavy fines. What advice can you give to help them navigate these tricky waters? And do you see the microscope being lifted, or is this more of a fool me once situation? A
little comment about the failures of the two banks, going back to the savings and loan failure too. The regulators need to be patient, because if they would have been patient, you wouldn't have had these problems. Setting that aside, that's my opinion, not necessarily factual, but I think if you look into it, it's a pretty good opinion. When you look at regulation, it's not going anywhere. There is so much movement on the consumer advocacy side of things today that I would tell credit unions and banks alike this: wear a white hat. Yes, margin's great, but it better have value to your consumer. And you want to stay out of the newspaper, because there's not a lot of good things that happen. When you do great things in the community, when you do great things within your family, nobody puts that in the paper. Mm-hmm. News and media is all about negativism. It's about damaging your reputation. And so stay out of the paper, realize regulation's there. We have one product we're dealing, it's called Refund Plus, and we get institutions that are arguing about whether they should or shouldn't do it. And I ask them one question: did the contract say it was refundable? The answer is yes. Then you need to refund it. Don't worry about all the regulatory oversight, because at the end of the day, you will lose if you're in court and there's a document out there that says you should do this and you don't.
So as we close out here, what are your own predictions for the industry, and how do you see market challenges changing over the next 12 to 36 months?
So our banking industry in the U.S. is very, very resilient. You compare that to some of the other countries out there. We do a lot of business up in Canada. Not the size, scale, or scope that we have, nor the complexities. But the resiliency is there. I believe that we're going to see, especially it's an election year coming up, so you're going to see some things that are going to help the economy, if not just to help somebody get elected. Okay, so you're going to see interest rates. There's going to be some relief there. It was predicted. They knew it was going to happen. Inflation slowing down. But even inflation, if you take out food and fuel, mm-hmm. how much inflation do you think we really have? It's not as big as people think. Okay, so people don't necessarily think that. They think because gas is down to $3.19 a gallon that, wow, inflation's slowing down. Well, no, it's the economics are supply and demand, which is driving inflation. I don't know if you've built a house or talked to people that built a house. For the last 2 years, you couldn't get anything done. Ask them how it's going now. And I'm building a house right now. It's fast-paced, and things are moving along. So I think inflation will ease up. I think as you move into the second quarter, third quarter of 2024, interest rates will be up. And here's a big one. You know, people always measure sometimes loan-to-value. So how many deposits do I have versus what I'm lending, or what the value of this is versus I'm lending? You're going to see a lot of relief in liquidity because investments are coming mature. And we were in a historical lengths of very, very low, low interest rates. I know a credit union that invested $1 billion of their assets for a 1.5% return. Now think about that. Those are 18 to 24 months investments, sometimes 36. Well, we're about halfway through that already, in some cases a little more depending on whose opinion. All those dollars are going to become available. They're going to put those dollars to work so they can get higher returns, higher earnings. So I think the industry is going to be in good shape. In the credit union world, mergers have slowed down, mm-hmm. but they're going to pick back up. So there's going to be a lot of consolidation still. I think that's going to be important. And I think lending, you know, there is so much pent up demand. Lending is about emotions. When somebody goes buy a car, one of the reasons that dealers have all those greased cars on their lots, starting to get them back, by the way, mm-hmm. is people buy emotionally. I buy clothes. You asked the question earlier, okay?
I do too.
So I think that emotion is going to come back with vengeance, mm-hmm. and people are going to buy cars. You know, one of the things you see today in just the auto industry is cost of repairs are so high. Labor to repair a vehicle and the parts are what's creating it. They're breaking down more. You want to know why? It's because these cars are getting older and older and older. Now people are going to need to buy them. And they're going to come up with tools on how to finance them. They're going to come up, you know, I think some credit unions and banks are financing vehicles up to 120 months. That's a home equity loan. So I think that, and I think then the other piece of it is the housing market's going to come back very, very strong. Do I think we're going to be back to interest rates that are 0.5%, 1%? You know, you could go and get a new car through a credit union indirect channel and pay 1.29% interest at one time. Oh. Think about that. I don't think you're going to see that anymore. 3 or 4 might be the normal. So we'll settle down into a normal. My kids buying houses right now, they're like, God, can you believe the interest rates? Well, how about going asking my mom and dad when they bought their first house? 12, 13, 14, 15% interest. So things will normalize. Very resilient industry. A lot of good leaders and people working there. So I think it's going to be okay.
So how much of this do you see being affected by going into an election year as far as, because you kind of made that point with rates and whatnot.
There's going to be a lot. A perfect example I'd give you is during the last election year, somebody came up with a great idea about student lending, and we were going to pay off all their student loans. I bet that got a lot of votes coming in. Mm-hmm. Now, how many of them got their loans paid off? Very, very few, because it couldn't happen.
Right.
And so you get a lot of these things that people are trying to buy into, getting people to vote for them. And I think Americans have a pretty short memory. And so once that's happened and the event's over, whether it was delivered or not, I think has a big impact. But I think the economy is going to be the biggest benefactor of an election year. Mm-hmm. At least I hope so.
You and me both. Ideally, innovation should be everyone's North Star for 2024. Do you have any parting words for our listeners today or any advice about the innovation journey? Because we all know it is not an easy road.
No, it's not an easy road. My advice would be don't be afraid to fail. Okay? And I tell my staff here, you can make a bad decision as long as it's still thoughtful. Mm-hmm. Because you're not going into making that decision to make a bad decision. It just turns out to be a bad decision. It's the ones that aren't very thought out, that are negligent, and those are the ones that really drive me nuts. So don't be afraid to make decisions because they're all not going to turn out. Partner, and I'll keep pounding away, especially in the credit industry, find the right partners. Do a little more due diligence. I mean, some of the people providing services out in this industry today, I think about what we spend on cybersecurity, identity theft, info security. I mean, I can go on and on. It's millions and millions of dollars. So I would say make sure you're careful and thoughtful. Don't be afraid to fail. Invest with partners in innovation, digital data. Be careful with AI. But embrace it. And that's kind of an oxymoron, right? You have to be careful, pick the right partner. It's here to stay, but it's also very, very dangerous. And I think if they take some of that advice, and there's a lot of other things that they could do, but I think the industry is strong, and I think everything's going to work out good for everybody.
Well, that was a lot of great advice, and I could not have asked to wrap up 2023 with a better guest than you here today, Pete. So thank you again so much for joining us. To wrap up 2023, looking forward to 2024, and kicking off our second season of The Allied Angle.
Well, my pleasure. I'm excited about 24 and beyond, not only for our organization, but the financial institution marketplace as well. Thank you.